This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick a Week Podcast, episode 557, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick Week Podcast. This year is episode 557. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
While the music is listed in the show notes, apparently, that is not as easy to find as we had believed.
So we're gonna address that right now. If you're using the Apple Podcast app, stop.
Stop.
Just go download Pocket Cast, Downcast, Overcast. There are numerous, use iTunes. There are numerous podcasts that are better than that piece of shit. But that said, we're looking into it. Many of you pointed out that the show notes were not visible in the Apple Podcast app. We're looking into it. So, but go use Pocket Cast. It's better. Anyway,
music is always listed
on the website. We are iFanboy and we like comics and music. We read a stack of comics every week and one of us picks their favorite book and call that the pick of the week. And then we come here to talk about that book, other books, other stuff, give out dumb superpowers, have some fun, try to entertain each other. And that's about it. We're going to warn you, though, that we're going to talk about what happens in the books, often considered a spoiler. So if you're sensitive to that, press pause, come back after you read your books, or just stop listening. But thank you for downloading. Please keep doing that. Either way, exercise some caution. This week, Josh was so happy to have the pick because there were just so many options to choose from.
I got to say, as early as this morning, we make a list that we email out, like, here's the list of what we're going to talk about in what order. In that is the pick. And I was like, I don't know. And I was going through my stack of physical books and then looking through the Comixology stuff. And I just didn't have an answer. And then I realized that I had not read Darth Vader number 25.
Oh, wow.
It was the one I had left. And I went, oh, well, this is the last issue. I need to give this a read. And it was like, it was a sign. Is what it was. Because I got, you know what? I bet this is going to be pretty good. It'd be really funny if this was pick of the week. And I finished it and I was like, totally pick of the week. It was the one that, you know, I had fun reading and it capped off a very sort of unexpectedly enjoyable run. A very consistent one as well from Kieran Gillen and Salvador LaRocca. So yeah, the pick of the week is Darth Vader number 25. The last issue, which just buttons everything up. And I was like halfway through it, and I was like, this could totally be the pick of the week. And then they offed that one character.
Yeah.
We gave you the spoiler warning. We're talking about it. Sorry. So Dr. Aphra, the plucky young lady, who you never really knew she was a good guy or a bad guy or what, or was she just amoral, I guess, is kind of what she was. And she looked like she'd fought her way. Vader turned against her at one point, and then she fought her way into, snuck her way into the Emperor's throne room. And that was like an issue or two ago, and we kind of didn't see that. And she basically got there and tattled on Vader. And then the big turnaround in this issue is that the Emperor was like so glad that he had been doing all this scheming on his own. He was like, "Oh, that is wonderful Sith behavior." And so Vader takes the girl for a walk down a hallway, and she's like, "Well, listen, I did this, but he's happy and everything's cool. I didn't tell him about this other thing." And he goes, "Get in there." She's like, "The airlock?" He shuts the door, and she's shot into space, never to be heard from again. And I was like, "Damn." Because the one thing that was consistent that it really was interesting about this series in general is that there was no real attempt, certainly beyond what was done in the prequels, to humanize Darth Vader as a character. There was no romanticizing of him done by Kieran Gillen. He was right. Vader. He was a force of nature. He's very stoic. He was very effective. Sort of all of his dialogue really fit in with the voice of Vader as I hear it in my head. And it was really fun because it was unapologetic in that way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this run needs to be, 25 issues with, I'm pretty sure there's LaRocca throughout, right? So,
yes.
So not only on two levels does it need to be remembered. One, because Gillen and LaRocca doing, a great 25 issue run together. And then also, this has come probably the closest I've seen in any attempt to redeem Vader from being a menaceful villain after the damage that was done in the prequels, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You guys need to let it go. I mean, just don't worry about them. He's still awesome.
You know what's so funny is that after I said the damage of the prequels 15 years ago, I took a moment and in my head, I'm like, wow, I'm a nerd.
I wasn't even thinking of it that way, but it's just nice to know that like the character sort of bounces back. I don't think of those things when I read this. When I read this, I hear the character really from episode 4, from that version, that first Vader,
because this takes place
just after that. You hear it, in James Earl Jones's voice, the earliest version of it, that one that's not quite right, the one that surprised David Prowse. Admiral Tag gets killed.
No, he doesn't get killed. Oh yeah, he does get killed. You're right. Yeah, and we see the ascension of Admiral Ozzel,
and it's basically exactly the same Ozzel that we see in Empire doing the exact same thing, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I've enjoyed Kieran Gillen's ability to be evil with his writing of Vader in this whole series. I loved. I really like Dr. Aphra. I love the Nega C-3PO and R2-D2, the evil versions. I thought it was just great, but it all culminated in a fantastic bits of dialogue from the Emperor, which I thought was just great. Like, I could hear the Emperor going, "Good job!" Like, I could hear him, like embracing it. It was great.
What's even better is that you can imagine him in the scene that is not pictured here, where she's telling him everything.
Yes.
And she's like, "Yes, good. Oh, yes. Oh, really? Yes. Just wait here. He'll be here soon." So he defeats his enemy. Like, they wrapped every single thing up. They knew this end was coming for a long time. And the killing of Aphra really cemented it for me. I was like, because that's a fun character that you could really do a lot with in these comics.
But you kept on reading, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I finished this.
I didn't at first. I found that later.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I finished the issue at first, and I was like, oh, man, this is really good, but I'm bummed that he killed off Aphra. And then I turn the page, and I see there's an epilogue where Aphra did it again. She avoided death, and she was able to, despite being thrown away in the airlock, be saved by the droids and continue.
I want to ignore that.
No, I'm glad.
I don't think you can. They're doing a solo.
They are.
Book.
Yeah, doing a solo.
I know,
book, yeah.
But I want to ignore it.
Yeah.
Because I really liked the choice. There's actually like two backup stories in this. That's the one, and then the other one is this sort of like sand people tale of Darth Vader when he came and destroyed them all, and they sort of revere him as a god. It was drawn by Max Fiemora and colored by Dave Stewart.
Yeah, the art was the only good thing about that story. I don't buy that the sand people would then worship Vader like a Burning Man. But that's fine. But going back to Aphra, I like the fact that I don't want to ignore that, because that's the equivalent of the end of episode 4 and Vader spinning off into space, and you're just going, well, what's going to happen to him? Like, the evilest people get away somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is going to be the thing that puts her on the side of the rebels so they can use her for something else.
So you think?
Yeah, I guess.
She owns 2 murder droids.
They have to listen to her.
Right, but still, they delight in murdering people. Remember that fucked up episode where Black C-3PO wanted to take control of people's bodies? Like,
I do. I do.
Straight up disturbing. Yeah, but I'm glad that she's around. I want to read more of her, and it's going to be Kieran continuing to write her, which is cool. Which is interesting because we're seeing new characters emerge in the Star Wars universe from the comics. I mean, I saw, you know, like, you know, try to avoid them, you know, in the media blackout, any Star Wars news, but I did see the rumor that the casting for the Han Solo. But anyway, it's neat to see characters from the comics, you know, being, you know, continuing on and not being throwaways, because for years they were just throwaways, which is, I think that's neat. So.
Yeah,
but
you know what? Fun series. If you know, for folks who we like Star Wars, we're pretty adamant about that, and then the form it takes. And I think it's no small thing to sort of get something like this right in such a way that doesn't ruin any of the. It doesn't ruin experience, but it doesn't. It jibes with everything that we've seen before, and it doesn't shake the boat in a way that makes you go, well, that's not right. Like it just kind of worked, and it was fun.
Yeah,
and it looked good. I'm not a huge fan of Salvador La Roca, but this really worked for him. And there's some really nice layouts in this. The one where she gets shot into space is particularly nice.
Well, I think it got a little photo referencey at times throughout the run. But then there were times where it looked great. Then there were times where it was really wonky, where you had a hard time drawing stormtroopers or drawing lightsabers or things like that. But I'll applaud, aside from Capullo with Batman, when was the last time you saw somebody do more than 20 issues in a single run? Like that's...
Well, they did Iron Man together for a long time.
No, I know that. I know. But I'm saying in recent days in the landscape that we're at now, that Iron Man run was 5-6 years ago now.
Was it?
Yeah.
I have no concept anymore.
Yeah. That
stiffness, though, that we were talking about, like, that actually works for this book for some reason.
Yeah. Well, because he's drawing so much. There's so much inorganic characters.
Droids and machines.
But also just the way that Vader moves in the movies in that suit, you know, it works.
Yeah. And give it up for Vader being a badass in the beginning part of this book, too. I mean, even before we got to the Aphra Emperor scene, there's a whole scene where Vader dispatches the one-eyed dude and just takes care of business. I mean, like Vader was a badass in this book in a way that he hasn't been for a while. So good
Vader job. Down.
Vader down.
Vader, Vader down. Down.
So
cool. This was Star Wars Corner and Pick of the Week?
You got it.
Yeah, and... Although we're not mentioning Han Solo number 4 that came out this week, where the only notable thing that came in that is within 2 pages, Han says that I got this, and then he turns to Chewie and says, "You got this."
We haven't talked about that on here, have we?
Han Solo, yeah, we have. Yeah.
Okay.
It's been
all right.
Yeah. Exactly. But what my pick of the week, what I thought was fantastic, in a surprising place, was Deadpool number 20. Did you guys read this?
No. But no. I figured when you put it on here, there was a reason for it.
Yeah.
And I flipped through it, and I was like, oh, it's a very special episode.
It's a very special episode of Deadpool, and I applaud Jerry Duggan because he wrote in the back of the issue, he says that since he's been writing Deadpool, he's been trying to put Deadpool in unique situations that haven't been done before, you know, and both from and by reading Deadpool for this whole run, you know, it's been a combination of story as well as like art and craft wise. So I remember we had that cutaway issue and things, you know, stuff like that, taking risks. But this was an entire one and done issue where Deadpool, in the beginning of the issue, Deadpool happens upon a woman who's standing on the top of the theater where the Avengers headquarters is, where he lives, with the intent to jump off to kill herself. And he says, you know, you don't want to do that here. Parker Industries is just down the block. And he proceeds to have her tag along on his night of working, where he's busting up, you know, like he's basically being a merc and busting up bad guys and doing things like that for money. And then eventually culminates in him dropping her off at the emergency room saying, you know, listen, I can't help you, but these people can. And it becomes a really, I mean... have Deadpool do a anti-suicide message is probably a good challenge, and he hit it out of the park. This is fantastic. So very well done. Dealing with a very, very difficult topic in a relatable, meaningful, entertaining, I laughed, and just good way. So good job, Jerry Duggan and Matteo Lolli, for taking a tough topic and making a really great issue out of it.
Do you read this normally? Have you been reading this for 20 issues?
Yeah, I have, because I like Jerry Duggan's a great writer. I really like him.
I do too, and yeah. I read all the last Deadpool run, but when we sort of switched over to this new version, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I honestly, I've gone in and out of it because there was like the story arc where all his Deadpool, where he had a whole bunch of mercenaries dressing up like Deadpool. When
That's where I was.
And so I've wavered in and out of it. When I saw some chatter about this early in the week, and so I made a point to sit down and take a look at it. When I did, I was glad I did, because I thought it was just really, really elegantly done. So, which you don't often hear elegantly done with Deadpool, which is that's one of the reasons.
No.
I like it. Yeah. So, so good job.
Those flashback episodes were though.
Yeah. Right. Those are great. Yeah.
Who's the artist? They were Pick of the Week a bunch of times. It's the guy who does. Oh, I can't think of it right now because it's not the issue we're talking about. Yeah. I'll think of it later.
Scott Collins?
No. Koblish. Scott Koblish.
Scott Koblish. I knew it was a Scott with a K. Yeah.
You got me there. Yeah. So, all Lois, all the time in Action Comics number 965. I'm curious what you thought of this, Connor.
I don't know. It's weird.
I feel the same way. I kind of like it a lot, and there were parts of it I was like, that's wonky. But overall, it was interesting.
Yeah, it's basically kind of like, I don't want to say Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but it's sort of like, well, Lois is dead, so I guess I'll just take her place in her job at the Daily Planet. So says the older Lois from the other reality.
I mean, she is Lois.
She is Lois. She says not this Lois.
There's a lot more low going on since that Lando comic.
I don't like
low.
I don't either.
I don't like her call. I don't like her being called low by Superman. But
I don't approve.
So Lois. So if you've been reading Superwoman, Lois Lane of the New 52 died, and so she's been gone from her job for a long time, and Lois of the old universe has been bored living up in the woods. And decides she wants to get back to being a reporter at a major metropolitan newspaper. So she goes to the Daily Planet and just assumes Lois's duties.
Oh, is this my desk is right here, right? Oh, right. Okay, yeah. Okay, thanks. Great. How you doing? How you doing, Steve?
Oh, Perry's office is that way.
Right.
The gross exaggeration of Steve as a cyclist and the joking about his cyclist uniform will not be tolerated. There is a purpose to that, and as soon as you get into the office, you need to put on sweatpants. You can't be walking around like that. But they insinuated that there was some sort of sexual harassment going on because he was dressed like that, and I object.
Object. Hi. Yeah, I'm Lois. I'm back. I've been gone for a while. Where's the typewriter ink?
Yeah. Also, I know I look like I'm about 10 years older,
but
than when I left.
I'm the same.
I had a rough week. But you're right, Josh. It's kind of fun, weird. Like, all right, I guess we're doing it. Let's just
I guess
we're doing it.
That really isn't, because I feel like now they're at the point where they set this up, and now they need to deal with it. Like, I'm starting to feel like with other Clark, it's starting to feel like Lost. Like, they don't know.
Like, I'm actually super curious who this. So in the mix of all this, there's now this Clark Kent, who is not Superman and is not the one that died and is not the one from the old universe. It's just Clark Kent.
And he's like, listen, I'm just trying to get through the day.
Yeah, he spills coffee on Lois's computer, which screws her over because she had a password to get into the computer because it was some mystery thing. And
she's still wondering what these computers are.
Right. Where is the ink? Where do you put the ribbon? So anyway, at the end of the issue, Lana Lang, the new Superwoman, confronts her. And I've actually been reading Superwoman and mostly enjoying it. So that's...
Yes, I've been enjoying Superwoman as well, too. I also like when Lois wanted to know where the mimeograph was.
Right.
I don't know why it's Lois from 1950, but it is.
Apparently she's Superman. Older, so she would know more. Anyway. I don't want to know. I mean, I'm deeply curious to know what the story is going to be with Clark, but as soon as I know, I'm going to be disappointed. So I don't want to know. Like, the longer they string it out, fine.
What a defeatist attitude there.
I know how this works. I'm not new at this. You know, like, this is the fun part. Is waiting. And I don't, it's not going to be a good explanation.
I think anyone who gets a professional job in comics has to spend an entire month only drawing people wearing suits.
They just don't know.
Because there's a scene where Lex Luthor is in Perry White's office because he's the owner of the Daily Planet. And he's wearing a white suit, but I thought he was wearing a lab coat because it just doesn't look like a suit. Certainly not one that a really, really, really rich guy would be wearing.
Well, there's this guy running for president. Anyway.
So, I'm reading this. I was about halfway through going, well, I guess you have to embrace the weird in this. And it's not so often that you can say Superman has this really weird streak running through with all the books. But it does.
That's good. I like that it does. That's good.
Yeah. This was basically a workplace issue. There was like, it was mostly workplace politics.
I just need a bottle of ink to fill my fountain pen.
There's a really nice Gary Frank cover.
Oh, yes.
And I just thought, man, he used to draw this every month.
Speaking of Gary Frank, he did the backup in Suicide Squad that came out this week, which was really, really good, and also featured 12 more pages of Jim Lee art. So there you go.
You know what? That's a fine trade.
By the way, I figured it out. Jim Lee is doing a monthly comic book. They're shipping Suicide Squad by month, like twice a month, with 12 pages in each issue and charging you $2.99 every time they do it. So
that's not bad.
Bravo DC for figuring it out. You know.
No, like, but that's not bad for him. If he's drawing a monthly book, that's...
Yeah, it's technically a monthly book. I've been railing on it because it's been less, but it's coming out every other week. So it basically is a monthly book.
If those other pages are Gary Frank, you have no ground to stand on.
Yeah. They're Gary Frank telling a fun Harley Quinn story, which was cool. So.
So, unfollow number 12.
Oh, snap.
Wow.
Shit hit the fan.
I didn't decide on my own personal pick of the week, but this would have been definitely in the running for it.
Yeah,
We went from 129 people on the list to how many are left at the end? 86.
It's a big chunk went out when that plane crashed.
I gotta say, just narratively, taking a jumbo liner and crashing into a bunch of people is a bold choice.
Ballsy.
It's still I'm almost like, it's too soon, is it? Because it's a bold choice, but it was effective. I really like what they did with Akira? Is that the name of the character?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I liked what they did with Akira. I thought it was really interesting. I liked how he was played near the end, you know, just sort of an insane genius, sort of quoting himself.
Megalomaniac.
Yeah. And the way that Courtney, you know, sort of responded to him, because it changed her. You know, she went from being the dilettante who didn't care about anything to being like, well, this is, you know.
A lot of great character arcs here. I mean, Dave is really interesting.
Yeah.
Who was basically the good guy. Every man is now a Russian crime boss,
which I enjoyed that. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, yeah. Rob Williams is really taking us on a journey here,
and a journey that you can't predict.
No, you cannot.
No, you could. I really hope they don't kill this bearded god guy because he's my favorite. he needs to stay alive for me.
That was a great plane, by the way, that he was behind. That was like a Spruce Goose level, like enormous. Yep. Yeah, that was awesome. So.
Did he just drive it into those helicopters?
Yep, pretty much. Well, he drove it into one, and then the other one ricocheted into the other, as they do. So,
we said this lots of times, but I want to mix, like, Mike Dowling is the chops. Like, he's doing the airplanes but then the really nice character acting at the same time. A lot of different characters, no superhero suits to hide behind.
Fake legs.
Yep.
Fake legs.
Yep. This book's got everything. there's your quote for the trade. This book's got everything, iFanboy.
This book's got everything. Planes, fake legs.
Lazarus 25. Bring on the Russians.
Yeah, this was great. Again, you want to talk about big sort of character moments. This was really the biggest moment for forever so far, because she found out what's been going on and that her whole life is a sham. And you know, she leveled up, really, and we don't know what she's going to do with it. And also, like, I was really impressed with the writing here. This was also close to being pick of the week, in that I was really impressed with the writing of the sister, who was telling her all that stuff. And Forever's like, well, you're just trying to manipulate me. And it was written in such a way that I wasn't sure how truthful she was being. There was an ambiguity to it that I really enjoyed during that scene also.
Well, because you can't really trust anyone.
Right, exactly. But you could also see, like, maybe she does care about her a little. Because, I look for the good in characters or in people and whatever. And then, you know, the girl that was training Forever, the one that she trusted the most, you know, she's also hiding all this stuff from her. And, like, you know, poor Forever, who's super, super powerful. And then there's a nice slaughter of people at the end.
Shit, there was. This book continues to be amazing. It's issue 25. It's been a couple of years now, but there are always enough twists and turns to keep it really interesting.
Yeah, and I like this was definitely like the close of it, just in the way that Unfollowed over 12 was sort of a chapter break of sorts. Mm-hmm. This was too, I think. We're gonna hop into the next version of this is what it felt like. This will be the end of a trade or something like that. But again, and I haven't mentioned this in a while, but it still stands. If this book is canceled, I will find you. And I will make you accountable.
You're going to pay.
He's sold books based on this. It's a proven tactic. There's a wall right there.
It's a fact.
You want to be up against it, or you just want to read the book? Your choice.
So... 5 pages into Reborn, number one, the new Mark Miller book with Greg Capullo, a character says, "What the hell?"
Exactly.
And I basically said, "What the hell?" along with him. Because the first 5 pages are very, very confusing, but then I...
No, well, talk about the emotional roller coaster of this book. I'm right there with you. The first 5 pages were very, very confusing. Then it moved into where I was like, oh, shit, Miller. Like he's bringing it. Like as we see the main character go through her whole life and revisit moments of her life, and like as she's on death's door, and it's like, holy shit. And then the ending brings it all back, where like it's funny because like I was super excited for what's the book he's doing with Imminent called? I can't remember the name.
Empress.
I was super excited for Empress because
Space George Lucas.
Because of Imminent and Space George Lucas. Reborn I vaguely knew about, and it was like, oh, Miller working Capullo, whatever. And I actually like this way more than I have liked Empress up to this point.
Oh, yeah, I've actually dropped off of Empress, but this is really, really good.
This is good, and we know how great Capullo was from the 5 years on Batman, but this still even looked even better, if that's possible.
It's also it's not just Greg Capullo; it's the whole team from Batman. It's Jonathan Glapion and FCO Placentia, like the inker and colorist from that book. So like. People talk about him coming up. They all came over.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Is notable.
And it looks great. And I mean, and essentially what I took away from this, you guys tell me if I read it incorrectly or wrong, but this woman is elderly and victim of strokes and all this stuff, has another stroke and finally passes away and wakes up and she is much younger and she's on the battlefield in like a medieval-y kind of fantasy kind of scenario, and there's her father in armor, and I get the sense that everybody that was in her life have moved on to this plane of existence, and she's
just waiting for her.
Yeah, and they're waiting for her because she is some, you know, she's some heiress or some, you know, kind of point of power, and it's just like, it's that Miller emotional beat, you know, the whole middle of this, of watching this, you know, woman reflect on her life and then die. Like, I was like, Jesus Christ. And then to end on a high note of her being reunited with her father and being like, well, what the fuck is going on now? So, way to start, bravo to this whole team, because it was very, very good.
I didn't love it.
All right.
I didn't think it was bad, but I'm not sure what it is yet, I guess, is a little of that. And I like Empress, but I might just like it for Space George, Space George Lucas, but just for the art. I'm not sure what this is. I have noticed, there's been a lot of fantasy-type books lately.
There have.
So that's saying something. I'm not sure what. But
are we moving from sci-fi to fantasy now is the...
Are we really late on Game of Thrones capitalization? Is that...
Who knows?
I don't know, but there's a bunch lately, and I like that. Yeah. But we'll see. I don't know what to think about this book yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and one thing I also thought is that after seeing 5+ years of Capullo with Snyder, where there's a balance of dialogue and words and art, and see him working with Miller, who has a different balance, who
much more sparse,
and letting the art tell more of it, whatever. I thought that was, I was like, oh, this is kind of, you know, unencumbered with plot, Capullo. Not to say anything wrong, because Snyder was telling a story and did it very, very well. But it's just, it's interesting to see Capullo work with a different kind of writer like Miller. Oh, so,
yeah. I mean, Miller's way more decompressed than Snyder is any day of the week. They're night and day.
Yeah.
But also, just to see Capullo do fantasy instead of superhero stuff. I mean, like, you know, giant creatures and axes and, you know, it was, I loved this. I thought this was amazing.
Yeah, it was very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Clone Conspiracy number one came out this week, and this is, I guess, the Spider-Man event that's happening in its own title, or I don't know if this is going to jump
I went, why did he read this? And then I saw Jim Chung.
Exactly. And like, and it's really with a bitter pill, because it's, you know, it's Jim Chung is great. He's just great.
Yeah, and I was like, whoa, where'd he been?
Yeah, if you looked at these pages, they're just great. And the story is garbage. Well, that's not garbage, but it's just like, it's real. It bothers, like Slott, and I think we're all in agreement that Slott's been on this book too long. But by going back to the Jackal and even using the C word, and all, which isn't the first time this has happened in Slott's run, you know, it's just not, and like, this has been building up in the Amazing Spider-Man books, you know, kind of, it's been bubbling below the surface and leading up to this as an event often does. But it's just like, again, it's like, what, you know, like, why go do new stuff? You did new stuff with Superior Spider-Man. Do new stuff. Don't go back in time. And everyone's all up in arms because the backup of this issue is basically a retcon of Gwen Stacy's death, where it shows.
Oh, God, not again.
It shows, and this time we get Gwen's inner dialogue as she's laying on the bridge before she's thrown off, when she puts the pieces together and realizes that Spider-Man is Peter. So the retcon is that Gwen knew that Peter was Spider-Man when she died, which a lot of people are up in arms about. I don't give a shit, because that's what they do. They want you to react that way, and it's something you didn't know, and it's all this sort of stuff. But I have the bigger problem with just leave it alone. Do something else, because you've got Jim Chung, who's amazing. Do something else. So I don't know. But yeah, so at the end of this issue, basically Jackal has brought back Gwen and her father back to life now and today, and they have their full memories and their full complement of memories, and now that's where it's going from here. So it's rough. Indeed. But it looks great. And Josh, well, Josh, lots of glowing blue. Lots of glowing blue.
I'm fuck that. not even Jim Chung.
Quick break now to talk about how you can support iFanboy. If you go to iFanboy.com/support, there you can find various ways to help. One easy way is to click on the Amazon link. Do all your Amazon shopping through that link, and we get a little piece of the action. Helps keeps the show going, keeps the lights on, keeps us all happy. And then even a better way is iFanboy.com/Patreon. That's where our Patreon is. And or Patreon.com/iFanboy. Either one of those links work. And that way, you can help us directly every month. We have lots of great Patreon rewards. Ron's been sending out packages to the Patreon. They've been arriving the last couple of weeks. We also do our monthly hangout. We do all kinds of special shows because of the Patreon. All kinds of great things happening. We're very close to our next goal, which is the return of the iFanboy t-shirts. So we love all the patrons, and we thank them all at the end of the show, with thumb superpowers.
And a quick note, if you know, many of you have, like you mentioned, many of you have gotten your rewards packets. If you haven't gotten yours yet, there's another wave going out this month, so just keep an eye on your mailbox. There's a lot of you, so we're going to get to you all. Don't worry.
So we thank everyone who helps us out at fanboy.com/support. And if I think about it, it's possible All-Star Batman number 3 would have been my pick, and not before. For the brutal fight between Batman and the KG Beast, not for the casual way in which the KG Beast took out the Royal Flush Gang, but mostly for the return of Harold, who I have not seen in, and I feel like, 20 years.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Now I'm like, wait, what's he talking about?
Did you read it?
Yeah.
The
guy at the end, Harold, who builds all of Batman's gadgets.
Oh, right.
Right. That dude, yeah.
He was a big character in the 90s in the Alan Grant, Norm Brayfogel run. He was Batman's gadget guy. He built all the cars and all the stuff, and he lived in the cave, and he's just sort of hunchback mute who only wanted to build gadgets. And they got rid of him. They killed him, I think. But I literally haven't seen this guy in decades. And I was reading this issue on the plane, and I had to stop myself from yelping Harold when I saw who it was.
So you remembered it. I have no recollection of that.
Yeah, he's always one of my favorite characters.
Were you looking for Yelp reviews of Harold, or you were going to Yelp him?
Like
an audible Yelp. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
used to call that an eep.
That was fantastic, and I'm glad he's back because he was a really good actor.
Harold Allnut.
I didn't remember his name being Allnut. He was always just called Harold. Mm-hmm. But sure, Allnut's fine.
I really enjoyed the fight between Batman and KG Beast in this. I like how they dealt with the fact that he's not called KG Beast anymore by just crossing out the K and the G, because we all know that he is KG Beast, so whatever. But yeah, it was fun. I mean, it continues to be. I mean, John Romita Jr. He's a master. So
yeah, but like he needs to be on the right project, is what we've learned over the years, and this really works for him.
Yep.
You know,
this is a brutal book.
Not 12 Avengers standing around.
Yep.
You feel the brutality in his art, right? Like when they're fighting, you really feel like you hear the crunch when they punch each other.
Well, that's why he was great on Kick-Ass. Yeah. Like that was some of the best work he ever did.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
The penultimate issue of this wave of Sheriff of Avalon number 11 was out this week. It's funny because at the beginning of this series, I was like, I think this is really good. I don't know what's going on. And now it's all coalesced, I feel like, and we're building up to a thing, and I'm just really enjoying the end of it. So all of those sort of, I guess, almost a confusion about some of the stuff was going, like, I know who everybody is now. I know where they're coming from as much as I'm allowed to, I guess. And I just really dug this issue. This was really good. I think we just made a pick of the week not too long ago, and I could have done it again. I'm really looking forward to the next.
Sounds like a threat. I could have done it again.
I don't know that I would have had anything else to say.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking for, like, we were talking about, you know, the issue 25 of Lazarus or issue 12 or, you know, endings of things. Issue 12 of Unfollow or issue 25 of Darth Vader. And this is the setup right before, you know, the ending, the nominal ending of the first sort of part of this book. And it's great. And it's literally like three people in a room, who's going to blink, you know, what's going to happen. That's like the whole thing. It's really good.
I'll tell you what will happen. A lot of face slapping.
I want that one CIA guy to get slapped. He needs getting slapped.
The Scott Foley guy?
That guy.
Yeah.
Forget that guy.
Jupiter's Legacy, also the penultimate issue.
Ugh, I don't want less Frank Quitely in my life.
I know. It's so good. Just looking at the page after page. I mean, and admittedly, I feel like this particular volume has been sparser from a visual standpoint. You know, there hasn't been crazy backgrounds or crazy, you know, but like, it's just the elegance of the people that comes across with what he does. I just love it. It's so good.
I will say there's a thing that happened here that I'm starting to see happen more often is that, so Sky Fox is like the whole thing is about finding him and his big return, and he's kind of handily dispatched.
I love that.
I feel like that happens a lot though. Like we spend so much time.
It's a great device. It's a great device. We've built up getting the team together. The team gets together and they're all immediately dispatched.
Yeah.
I love that. So now I don't know how they're going to get out of it. That's the whole thing. Like
the crazy guy with the hair.
Well, who knows? They have he could be dispatched too.
That guy's a winner. He's tremendous.
Yeah. The Lando Bruno Mars guy?
He's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. But yeah, you know, in the end, like, I want to read the ending. I want to see what happens. I'm very excited. I don't want it to end.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem with Quitely doing the pencils is that it's going to end in a year and a half. He'll be back and we'll celebrate it again. So.
It only just occurred to me that, like, Miller and Morrison don't like each other. And look at Frank Quitely right in the middle there.
Well, what's funny is that I saw a photo recently of Quitely and Grant together, and Quitely was sketching apparently a new idea. Apparently they're working on something. Who knows when and if it'll ever come out? But it's like the child of divorced parents.
Guys, it's like me between you two.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, obviously,
you hate each other, and I have to be the one in the middle.
Yep.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there a guy who works with both Morrissey and Johnny Marr?
Not anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
That doesn't work.
No.
Frank Quitely must be a great guy.
Yeah, well, he is. I mean, he absolutely is.
There you go.
Yeah, he absolutely is. So, yeah. Anyway, so moving on. I was shocked to see Great Lake Avengers number one show up here in my rundown because I didn't add it, and I thought I would be the only one to ever add it.
I thought, all right, I know there's 100 books out this week, but I'm going to talk about this because it's I'm going to read it because it's wacky and it makes me. I was reading West Coast Avengers when these guys showed up the first time. I don't remember a ton about it, but I thought I'm going to give this a shot. And I thought the art was very good.
Will Robson,
which sounds familiar to me. I don't know what I know him from, but Dodson. That definitely sounds familiar.
We got Dodson. We got Robson.
We got Robson.
So the Great Lakes Avengers were these characters who came out of like sort of a, I think it was John Byrne, run on West Coast Avengers or Avengers West Coast at that point. And they're sort of like B grade Midwest, superheroes. And so they've got a series here and it's attempting to be funny.
Yeah, that, I mean,
are they like C level? They're not B level.
It's like, yeah, it's D's like more, right? D level is more accurate. It's like every 8 years or so, somebody, yep, they dig up the Great Lakes Avengers. The last time they did this, it was called GLA, and it was, you know, like playing off of the JLA logo and all that sort of stuff. And
yeah, it was John Byrne in 1989 created,
yep,
them.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is that they're always, you know, that they're bumbling, and this is where Squirrel Girl came from, who now is very popular, but she was, you know, like she was an example of a loser-esque character that was part of the team. And there's the flat guy, and then there's the Immortal Man, and yeah, so
Flat Man,
Mr. Immortal,
Flat Man, Mr. Immortal, yeah, exactly. So I mean, they're fun. It's neat to see them back. I thought the approach to this was clever, that through various legal missteps, the Flat Guy, the Great Lakes Avengers now own the rights to the Avengers TM, and so the lawyers are sent to try to get it back, and so he says he'll give it back to them in return for becoming full-fledged members of the Avengers again. And so then they're off there. Then he's, and it's trying to get the band back together. So, yeah.
I just thought it was a little on the nose. Like some of the jokes, I was like, all right.
Yes, that's what these have always been known for.
So. I know, but I thought, you know, maybe they're going to, there's been some good funny comics lately. Maybe they're going to raise the level. Yeah. But it was kind of what I expected.
Yeah. And in terms of what I expected, the last issue of Howard the Duck on Chip Zdarsky and Joe Quinones' run, Howard the Duck number 11 came out, and this was a good nice little wrap up. And what I think has been, and even in the backup matter, Zdarsky mentions it as they're doing their thank yous and saying their bows, that they were able to do this run on Howard the Duck nearly free of getting run into Secret Wars or Civil War. Which is a rare thing at Marvel, like, you know. So they basically were able to tell their story, as wacky and crazy as it was. Had some great moments, good laughs. I enjoyed the whole run. If you didn't read it, go back and read it and trade, because I think it was playing in the Marvel pool and just having a blast with it. And so yeah, it was nice to see it wrap up and see them move on. So
that one went to 11.
It did.
I'm sorry, that was stupid. So that does it for our books that we picked. But we had our Patreon pick, of course. The patrons, the folks who go to ifanboy.com/Patreon or vice versa. Does it work both ways?
Nope. Patreon.com/ifanboy or ifanboy.com/support, where you can click a link to go to Patreon.
Why does it say ifanboy.com/Patreon in the script?
I don't know. That should not be in there.
I didn't
wrong.
Do that.
That is incorrect.
Either way, every Wednesday, we open up the books for all the folks out there who are patrons, who are contributing patrons, to vote on which book they would like us to talk about that we might not normally talk about. So this week it was from Valiant.
Valiant made it in.
Valiant made it in.
Snuck in
with Britannia number 2.
Here's why I love this pick. Because it was a number 2 issue.
Yes.
I really did like that.
Yep.
I was very happy it wasn't a number 1, because I kind of think part of the fun is dropping in these books in the middle that we don't normally read and sussing it out. So I was very happy to see it wasn't a number 1 issue.
And how did sussing it out go for you, Connor?
It was okay. I liked aspects of it a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's important to note this is written by Peter Milligan with art by Jose Juan Rip, who I actually like a lot.
It's great.
With
color by Jordi Belair.
Sure. What the hell?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
She does all the books.
All the books.
But yeah, this is a Roman centurion story.
Yeah.
It sort of skirts the edge of fantasy, but I feel like all the fantasy elements are in people's heads.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't quite clear on, because I was kind of like, all right, no monsters. Wait, there's monsters? Maybe there's not monsters.
Well, I feel like every time there were monsters, they were then disproved.
Right.
You know, like the guys with the masks, you know. I feel like the whole thing is like this is Sherlock Holmes Centurion, so that he's debunking all of the fantastical elements.
And it's Britannia because the soldiers are in Britain during this time. And what have the Romans ever done for us? We cut back to Nero a little bit. I was quite taken. I was like, oh, I like this. That's what I thought.
I mean, it very much was. I mean, Peter Milligan writes a certain kind of comic book, and if you're a Peter Milligan fan, this is, you know, I was going to finish my thought, was that this was more, I think the historical aspect of it gave it a grounding that is often missing from a Milligan comic.
Perfectly put.
Thank you.
Perfectly put. I mean, I think there's Milligan and there's good Milligan.
Yeah.
Some people like all of it and I want to, but I don't always like it.
I think
it.
Sometimes Milligan is at his best when he has constraints. And that's not to say that Milligan constraintless can be a blast, you know, and especially when he's with somebody like Brendan McCarthy or, you know, these really crazy kind of out there artists. But, you know, Milligan is a great writer. And when given, okay, this is the arena that you're in, you know, he does something really well. I have no idea what's going on. I kept on waiting for Ninjak or Exo Manowar to show up, but they're not there. So, yeah, good job, Valiant. So
did you enjoy it? I guess we're going to go through this.
Yeah, okay, let's do ratings. But, ratings.
Yeah.
Ratings.
I
give it a 4.
I will give it a 3.5.
I'm going to give it a 4. Will you be reading it?
No.
Connor?
Maybe. If I remember to read it, the next one.
I'm there, but I will add, I'd like to remember to read it.
Right. Yes, that's what I mean. Like, if I... It's hard because it's, yes.
It's difficult to develop new patterns in this game.
I'm going to make a concerted effort to not miss the third issue.
All right, I will help you. You help. Are you going to go back and read the first issue?
I don't know if we need to.
I didn't feel like that either.
I don't. So I'm going to say no.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't feel the need to read the first issue either.
Yeah, I mean, yep. Maybe it's because we're history experts. But no, that's not
or old-fashioned comic booking.
Yeah, you know? didn't feel lost at all though. So that was a good.
Gave you all
nice
the information effort. You needed in the in the issue.
Then there's a lot of historical prose at the end.
I really want to read it, but it's 4 pages of double columns.
It was a lot. I was like, well, I'm not going to finish that today. But
I started reading it, and I was like, I can't.
Just like by a professor.
Yeah.
like Kieran put in that
3. That's part in 3.
Of, yeah, 3.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep. Yeah. So, all right, cool. So thank you, patrons, for voting. And it was another neck and neck close. The votes the past couple of weeks have been by inches. So if you're a patron, you got to go to patreon.com/iFanboyOnWednesday and make sure you vote for a book because it's really getting neck and neck. Some of you have asked about us posting the votes live and all this stuff. We don't want to artificially influence the voting.
Ooh, yeah.
So it's the kind of thing where we don't want people to run away with making us talk about Betty Boop or something stupid just because it'll be funny, you know? Like really vote for something you want us to hear us talk about. So, anyway. But maybe we'll post what the final tally was or something like that. I'll figure that out. So, all right, moving on. We got some time for your questions. I know we skipped them last week. We've had lots to talk about.
A lot of books the last, like 3 weeks in a row.
A lot of
like
books.
25 books.
Which if everything goes as usual, there'll be a week where there's like 7, hopefully. So, anyway, so onto your emails. Our first email is from Brian from Parts Unknown, who emails and says, I'm listening to episode 30.
Oh, God.
Where 52 number one was the pick of the week. You were discussing the potential for failure of the series, in part based on the failure of DC's last weekly book, Action Comics Weekly. Not surprisingly, Ron seemed to have the lowest expectations of the series. Short of not living up to the promise of never collecting the series, I think it's fair to say DC knocked this one out of the park. Are there any other series you thought were going to bomb and ended up being great? I'm just going to make all this meat. Good job, Ryan.
I'm confused.
So.
Short of not living up to the promise of never, that's a lot of doubles.
He's saying, he's saying, I think he's saying that we said they weren't going to do it.
No, I think he's claiming that they
said something stupid, like they're never going to collect this whole thing, and they did.
Maybe. Okay.
That's what I read it. It doesn't matter. Episode 30. Good Lord.
Yeah. Geez.
What's interesting is that he said, not surprisingly, Ron had the lowest expectations of the series, and I thought, I didn't?
Not back then.
Yeah.
Well, because
you were not
then,
as jaded.
Yeah, no, you weren't as jaded, but it also, it's I mean, it was Wade, Rucka, Johns, and Morrison.
Yeah.
Even you were like, that's a great lineup, you know? Yeah.
So. I think I remember it being a thing where we didn't know if it would work, and I guess for the first like handful of issues, we're like, not sure. And then once
we kept waiting for it to slip a week or I mean, because you know,
yeah,
we'd never seen it.
It's a weekly series, and we kept waiting for that. And eventually, we were like, I guess it's not going to happen. And it turned out to be a great series. Anyway, so let's.
I still remember. Was it the robot, the machine men guy, bidding on eBay in a Grant Morrison scene? That was my favorite part of it. I don't remember the joke, but it was great. I think of that every time I think of the series.
I'm trying to think of a series that we thought would bomb, but I guess what is the definition of bomb? Does that mean creatively? There's a lot of.
Are there other series that you thought would bomb and ended up being great? I mean, it's more recent and it's not finished, but who, you know, none of us would have been like, you know what, the great book right now is Flintstones.
Well, that's more of a surprise, though. Is there a series that we thought was going to bomb? So, like, we have a whole lot of hoopla about Secret Wars, and we were like, oh, this is going to suck, and it ends up being great. I think that's more the question as opposed to something that surprises us like Flintstones, you know? Like,
so when you look back at different events or something like that, I mean, like, the closest that they came, like, The Siege was really good.
Yeah.
That's the best of those, I feel like.
Siege is one I think that we were fairly skeptical going in. And we're like, oh, shit, no, this is actually really good.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
There are a lot of books, I'm not going to be able to name them, but I know we've said a lot of times this book's never going to make it more than 8 issues.
Yeah.
And they ended up having done that. So I guess that would fall into that category.
Oh, I'll give you one. I'll go back to, this wasn't an event, but Remender doing Frankencastle.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it did bomb. I don't know, but I thought it was great.
So there's a bunch. I mean, we just, the pick of the week, Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I mean, I at the 2 issues in, I think that we were like, this is weird. I mean, we wouldn't have been at the end, 2 of us saying that we loved it, you know?
Right.
Outright. Or I mean, it didn't bomb, but I think now of like something like Red Hulk, which I was like, that's stupid. And then when we all read it, we were like, that was really fun.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of those, but those are almost like things that were really popular and successful that we thought would be stupid.
Right.
I guarantee you at least 10 times we've said this book will never make it more than 6 issues, and it has gone away more than that. I know that's a thing we say a lot. And
I believe Lucifer is in its second season on television.
Yeah.
I know that for a fact.
Eric from Los Angeles, back in December of 2005, I discovered Warren Ellis' The Authority, and ever since I have been thinking about which Wildstorm titles should be turned into movies. Now, with the recent announcement of Warren Ellis' upcoming reboot, Rebirth of the Wildstorm Universe, I wanted to know which Wildstorm titles you'd like to see adapted into either movies or Netflix-style series a la Marvel Cinematic Universe. Personally, I'd like to see a film version of Alan Moore's Wildcats run, deconstructing the superhero films genre, followed by a Netflix series based on Wildcats 3.0 and Sleeper, which would run concurrently with one another.
So you Netflix just
kind is, of all of them.
Netflix is the new is the new.
Yeah.
It used to be the HBO series. Which one would you like to be on HBO? And then it was which one should be an AMC series? And now it's which now one should be a Netflix series. Yeah,
exactly. Well, first of all, they're not going to put it on Netflix because Netflix has a deal with Marvel and these are DC properties. But not accepting that. As a TV series on some cable network or something like that.
Amazon. It's going to be on Amazon.
There you go. I'm trying to think about what else is there at Wildstorm that.
I will give you the answers.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are other ones. It will be worth it. What do you
think? I love the original initial concept of Stormwatch, which was, you know, a team of international, you know, superpowered. There's a guy from Japan, a guy from Russia, a guy, you know, whatever, basically dispatched with keeping an eye on Earth. That's a great concept. That's great. And it had Thunder Agents. Yeah, and it had a great collection of characters. It had a ton of diversity, you know, in intrigue and all this sort of stuff. Then it, you know, kind of derailed. But actually, what's funny is that if you go back to everyone talks about Warren Ellis and The Authority and all this sort of stuff. He started on Stormwatch.
Right, I was going to say.
For a reason,
What was that, like, in the
The Authority, Stormwatch became The Authority.
98?
Exactly. Yeah, 98. Yeah. Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
That many issues in?
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess it was the whole 90s.
Yeah.
Stormwatch morphed into The Authority. That's the characters.
I don't think I ever read those early ones. I wasn't reading at that point, so.
I think a solo Grifter series would be fun.
That's I'm a sleeper. I mean, that's the one for me.
I mean, my first instinct is that that's already a perfect comic book.
Right.
But like, it'd be one of those things that I don't know what you could add to it in television that would make worth doing. But that doesn't stop anybody, so.
John Berenthal.
To me, it's about you have
That works.
You're basically doing a spy series with superhero spy series, which I guess is what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was supposed to be, but ended up not being. But so you could do it that way. It could be cheaper because it's not so solely a superhero show.
Yeah. Hell, I'll go total fanboy and I'll say Gen 13.
I was waiting for you to say that.
Yeah, screw that. Teen, 90210 with powers, sold, And also, like, people often forget that, there's Team 7 existed, which gives you a war theme, SEAL Team 6 kind of approach, this tactical,
That sounds expensive to produce.
True. Yeah, well, I mean, but, a band of brothers with powers, basically, or platoon with powers, basically, there's good stuff. The original germ of Wildstorm was quality.
And I was gonna, they're all like when you talk about it that way, they're all really strong concepts.
Yeah.
In that sense, I mean, like just outright. I mean, there's not. They do work in that way. It's interesting. I guess they don't think there's any name recognition to go ahead and develop those into things. But
remember when we freaked out when they brought Captain Atom over to the Wildstorm universe?
I remember when you did.
Yeah, well, I did. Yeah, because it was just crazy. So anyway, all right. Well, thank you for your questions. If you have any other questions or comments, you can always email us. Email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Don't forget to tell us who you are, where you're from. And none of you in these two emails told us how long you thought about these questions. So you got to make sure to. I mean, Brian, kudos for making all that meat, and we're glad you're doing that. But you got to tell us how long you thought about these. So there you go. All right, now is the time that everyone's been waiting for. As a thank you to our patrons, everyone who goes to patreon.com/ifanboy and chips in at a certain level gets a verbal thank you, and we bestow you with a superpower. There's no promise that it's going to be a good superpower. So first up, we want to thank Tyler Abrams. And Tyler is buoyant.
Nice.
He can float anywhere. He floats. Okay, he's a good floater.
Can you swim down there and grab that off the bottom of the pool? No, I cannot.
Nope.
So he can't. He can't actually submerge himself.
He can get down like maybe half of his body, like half a body length into the water. But that buoyancy just bounces him back up.
It's gonna shoot right out of the water.
Yeah,
if you can get three or four guys to hold him down, he'll pop out of that tub like a cork.
Exactly.
Or not tub, pool.
Yeah. That's useful.
Yeah.
Is it?
He's a great swimmer, though. That's for sure.
Like, if he gets eaten by a shark, that's not going to work out for the shark. He's going to still be dead, but the shark's going to be like, why does this keep happening?
All right. Josh, you're up next.
Daniel Kent cures herpes.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's the only disease he cures?
Yep. It's incurable. So...
Wow. So so does he use his power for monetary gain or?
I mean, like the thing is, it's not like a life-changing disease. You can live with it. It's just fine. But if you can get to Daniel and ask him to take care of it.
The A-team of herpes?
Does he touch you?
You can find him.
How does he heal? Yeah, he's the A-team. Good one, Connor.
Does he have to touch the sores?
Yeah. How does it work?
Does it have to be active when he does it? I don't think so.
God.
He's got to lay hands on you. He can cure your herpes. His superhero name is Kirpies.
Jesus Christ.
Justin Fraser can emit a low amount of heat from his hands. It's not enough to actually do anything other than if he held like a bowl of soup for like an hour, he could warm it up.
like a hot plate? Like a really low
warm plate? But not even like a hot as a hot plate.
Right.
Kind of like
a warming plate, which I believe
he could keep things warm. Like if you have a big party.
Like an electric blanket?
You could put the dishes on his hands. They'll keep him warm throughout the party.
He's a chafing dish.
Yes, kind of.
Wow. Wow.
Well, if he lives in a cold climate, he can sort of keep his hands under his armpits and keep his body a little warm.
So right. Hands?
Just his hands.
Just his hands.
Wow.
He's kind of like a microwave reheating setting, but not quite.
He has internal sterno.
Internal sterno. That's his name.
Internal sterno. All right. And finally, we want to thank Stephen Brown. And you know, often we talk about how these powers are sometimes a blessing and a curse. Stephen Brown was born with the amazing, amazing fact that both of his ears are sentient. But they can only talk to him internally.
Why are you so good at this? It is uncanny. This is your super. It's so weird.
So I don't know if Steven, if it was like he was supposed to be triplets and instead it
are you calling friends of yours who write comics?
No, I'm not.
Because I know you know a lot of people who can do this really well, and I don't trust you.
Listen, Jason Aaron, I need some powers. Come on, help me out of here.
No, he did it to us for us live when we came up with the idea.
Yeah. Like, I know.
So yeah, so Stephen Brown has sentient ears, which is very
are they normal. Evil or just regular people?
Well, they're regular people. I mean, but he's the only one who can hear them and talk to them, and so a lot of time he's got to deal with what they want. And there's a lot of picking a movie to go see is very difficult. You imagine?
Are you either. Sure he's not insane?
Possibly. So
I think Brian Wilson had this. It was just one ear, but
yeah. So all right. So if you want a superpower, you can go to patreon.com/ifanboy and sign up, and you can get your own very stupid superpower. And we thank everybody for their support. And another fun week of dumb powers.
So you heard us talking about the Talksplodes, about the Patreon rewards and those sort of things. Well, the good news is up. I think this week. It's going to be this week. We have a Talksplode with Mark Russell, the writer of Prez and the Flintstones. Had a conversation with him. We talked about where the hell he came from.
The elusive Mark Russell. Where the hell he actually was.
Yeah, he's well. We find out. We find out. It's not as exciting as you think.
Oh well.
But that'll be up this week. It was a good conversation.
Cool.
So again, thanks to the patrons for bringing those back and making those possible.
Yep. And additionally, you've all been very, very patient, but we're so close to getting the Luke Cage podcast out. I believe of all people, Josh finished it first. I finished it second, and now we're just waiting on Connor, and we'll see who ends up on the podcast. It's going to be out eventually, but sooner than last week.
If Connor doesn't finish it, though, we are going to have Method Man come on.
Yeah, exactly. Is that who was in that episode? Is that who that was? I didn't know.
Yes.
That was. Anyway,
even if I can finish it, you should have Method Man on.
Yeah. No.
You didn't know that?
Yes, I knew that. I was kidding.
That moment for me, I was like, oh, I'm in. Yeah. I mean, it was near the end.
Yeah.
Like, I'm 100% sold.
Don't spoil it for Connor.
Oh, yeah. I think he's okay.
So, and then additionally, we're about a little under two weeks away from Doctor Strange being released in theaters. And of course, we'll have a podcast talking about the last superhero movie of the year. So you can get the Talksplode of Mark Russell, the eventual TV and movie podcasts, and all other podcasts, all of our previous episodes can all be found at ifanboy.com, where you can also find out who is the music in the opening and closing of the show in the show notes. That's all at ifanboy.com. You can leave a comment there, tell people what you thought of the books that came out this week. Of, you know, there are so many books that came out, we didn't get to talk about them all. I mean, that Mosaic book came out, we didn't talk about that. There was some other stuff that came out. We it's too many, but tell people what you liked there. And you can go to facebook.com/ifanboy, and you can follow us on Twitter at ifanboy. And if you want to follow us individually for our own personal bits of nonsense, you can follow us at J.A. Flanagan for Josh, at C.S. Gilpatrick for Connor, and I am at Ron XO.
Finally, if you like the show, please consider reviewing it on iTunes. That's how people find podcasts, and we thank everyone who does that. You can even just leave us a star rating if you don't want to leave a review. Just 1 second to click a star rating, and all is forgiven. That's what I tell everyone.
Because you have a lot of grievances.
Yeah, I have a list of them, man.
Outstanding ones, and you're just sitting there like, let's see it. Click. All right, we're fine.
You're fine. We're good. I audit my list every couple months. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you, everyone who helps support iFanboy and recommends us to anyone anywhere in the world. Thank you.
All right. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. Back on schedule. Good job, boys.
Thank you.
Are we off schedule?
Well, we were running long these past couple weeks, but now we're coming at a good time. And so, all right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. I do not cure herpes.
You cause them, though.
Might have it.
Don't.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.